This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We are joined online by the lead economist at KPMG, who is Frank Blackmore, to help us make sense around their latest, of course, global economic H2 report for 2022. Frank, good evening and welcome to our show.
Good evening. Thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us. Yeah, Frank, and maybe let's just get into, you know, some of the kind of highlights that are in your global outlook from an H2 point of view. You know, one of the things that I guess you guys have touched on there is the growing geopolitical uncertainty and the, I guess, concomitant inflationary pressures that we are seeing there as well. Maybe give us a little bit around, I guess, the depths of the analysis that you've gone into, particularly, I think, on those two. I think let's start maybe with just kind of the geopolitical shifts that are taking place. What are you guys observing and how do we expect that going forward?
Sure. I think first, as a little background, I tell you, I think for the listeners, that it would be helpful to just understand that what happens here is KPMG's various jurisdictions around the world come together and formulate this report. So I have to do the South African version, but there's someone out there from the ocean country, yeah. Asia, obviously African colleagues as well, South America, as well as North America. And what helps is that usually we have very different stories. This one's growing and that one has inflation issues and this one's got power issues and that one has. And this time it's quite united. And I think the two topics you've asked me on tonight, inflation and geopolitical sort of instability, can be both related. So obviously there's some instability just caused by the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah.
That wasn't there prior to this. And then the, sort of the sideline issues that have come from this with sort of unity, what is China doing, what is India doing with respect to their relationship to China, to Russia, what's going to happen in Taiwan. But then again, you know, when countries get under pressure, irrespective of where they're located, then you often get a protectionist mentality coming in. We've seen even the U.S. doing this in previous years when the dollar was strong, and we might get to that topic. Then obviously it's not good for their trade, and they always then can wag a finger at other countries for various reasons. But, you know, if you're importing a lot of inflation and your currency is depreciating, you're under pressure, and that creates also some geopolitical tensions that are you know, in the market at this point.
And I mean, I think to stay with just first the geo kind of political shifts that are taking place, I think it's an interesting one because kind of the East is trying to kind of deepen its global footprint. Russia's coming to that party as well to, I guess, respond to the Western kind of energy they're getting about their invasion of Ukraine at this point in time. And then there's kind of then this kind of uneven realities that we're seeing in then the kind of European context with kind of UK, Germany also. One, of course, needing a lot of the gas that comes from Russia, now having a big pressure point around kind of soaring gas prices and all of that. And so all of this is just creating quite an interesting, you know, movie in the way in which it's playing out, is that we're seeing more, you know, Russian rubles being traded, at least in terms of capital flows between Russia and China. Russia insisting that the oil they're going to sell is going to come out in rubles. And then them, trading as well in terms of bond listings as well that are denominated in their local currency to create, of course, more reserves in terms of global flows. Your guys' reflection still on that macro picture?
I think you've highlighted a very specific point, and often politicians can't say, can't get into the detail, but it's obvious that Europe and many other countries are dependent on Russia for energy. But their constituencies, their people, don't like what's happening with respect to the war, and therefore expect pushback. And so I guess the politicians are always caught between this, pushing back against Russian aggression, but yet having a sweet deal with regarding to the energy prices, or looking strong at least when you negotiate on those energy prices. And that has created, yes, as you say, a very curious dynamic in world trade markets. Sure. I think it's also right. We've seen Asia rise for a number of years, the strength specifically of China and where it sits globally. But I also think that one could look at this issue in the short term and see all these dynamics happening. And long term, I think the other dynamics happening, where I think this invasion of Ukraine and these inflated energy prices are probably going to do the most for conversion to renewable energy than any other period. You know, any COP meeting that has previously happened and people have happily signed forms to reduce emissions and this and that. This war, I think, will be in the history books for what it did to accelerate the movement to renewables globally. And we're just seeing these interesting, I think, political wranglings happen in the short term as people try and make a plan to help them until that energy transition kicks in.
Sure. Certainly, I think going to be an interesting one as well to watch how these Western economies, particularly, I think, as I mentioned, in the Eurozone area or Euro area, how they're going to particularly respond to the political pressure point of course, soaring gas prices at this point in time, notwithstanding, of course, what's happening there within Russia and Ukraine. And then just getting back into as you said, Frank, that a lot of the emphasis that you guys do make, I guess, at least from your own contribution, is the South African lens from an economic outlook point of view. What are the big themes at this point in time that you guys are seeing that are going to be dominant themes getting into the second half of the year?
Sure. Well, I think a lot of commentators on your show have also probably brought this up, that before COVID, South Africa wasn't going anywhere fast, right? We had growth of around 1%. We had a number of issues, including the ongoing electricity crisis. And COVID was a bit of a distraction and gave us something else to worry about or unite about over that period of time. I think we overcame it pretty well. Then the invasion of Ukraine. And the report basically says, what can we expect over the next 2 or 3 years? And its way it says, well, growth should revert back to the sort of pre-COVID times. If we're not doing anything different, in other words, we're not driving a growth mandate per se, we can't expect growth to suddenly be a lot better than it was prior to COVID. Like everyone else in the global economy at this point, we're importing a lot of inflation via our energy prices, fuel, and food prices, and we're feeling that currently. That's going to peak, I think, sometime soon if we don't have ongoing shocks, that is. And then we'll see a slow reduction in inflation into the end of next year, trending back towards sort of that midpoint of the Reserve Bank's target at around 4.5%. I think also, hopefully, we'll see some improvement in the inflation numbers, both for this month as well as next month, which will help the Reserve Bank be more perhaps dovish in the rest of its monetary policy, which at the last change on the 75 basis point increase, they spoke globally. They spoke a hawkish game at that point. So the American thing, you can expect another similar increase, and even us, we will do whatever it takes to bring down this inflation. Hopefully, the reads on the inflation are such that it allows a more moderate, perhaps, increase in inflation, and then from that point onwards, I would say, as the data improves, that's going to also feed back to what we can expect out of this economy. We've had some good reads on unemployment, another reduction in the recent numbers. But, without economic growth over a sustained period of time and at a decent level, That is only going to revert upwards. And so I think the focus should be on a growth mandate on this point. We can't do much about the inflation given global prices at this, at this point. We are benefiting from some of them, namely coal, as well as your platinum group metals, et cetera, although the demand has come down. That will pass. But what we can focus on for the longer term is growth.
Sure. And I think, you know, it is one of those things that, for me, does create a bit of a basket of complexity in terms of how we actually think about economic growth in South Africa. And Frank, I do want to pick this conversation up shortly after this ad break. Power listener, we are in conversation with Frank Blackmore, who is a lead economist at KPMG. And we are currently reflecting, of course, around one, just to start the conversation around a kind of a macro lens around the global economic outlook. But we are now moving closer, of course, to home and looking at, at least some of the things that KPMG is seeing in terms of what the pressure points from a growth point of view. And I think what are the things that will inform the kind of outlook that we need to see for our economy going forward. It is 46 minutes after 7 o'clock, Power Listener. We are in conversation with Frank Blackmore, who is the lead economist at KPMG. And we are, of course, doing a little bit of an economic reflection around the work that they have done in looking at an economic outlook from a global point of view, leveraging their global offices, but also, double clicking into the South African context as well. And Frank, before we continue, I guess, on some of the points that I did want to, lean on, we do have a caller coming through from Randfontein. That is a foodie. How are you, sir?
You feel so well, too. And your guest, our guest, how are you?
Great. Thank you very much, sir. How are you?
You know, to feel so fascinated by this, the strategy towards infighting inflation. Here in South Africa, we increase the interest rates. In the U.S., Biden passed the inflation reduction bill. Is the strategy the same, or is Biden far different or advanced than us here, down south, the tip of the continent? Good evening to you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sefudi, and wishing you a lovely evening. And yeah, I think, Frank, the question that is coming from Sefudi there is around kind of monetary policy tactics and also, I guess, being able to take a view around, that Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, which is, of course, a landmark law that has, been aimed at, of course, curbing inflation and reducing their budget deficit at this point in time, really coming through, of course, passed by Congress and signed into law as well recently, is, and I guess the question is around how do we interact with some of those kind of, Western kind of power moves in the way in which we think about our own monetary policy and planning here?
Sure. Okay, for one thing, South Africa is sort of just a more commonsensical place. We understand that inflation isn't great. If you've ever heard the governor talk in his speeches about inflation, it's his number one target. And the reason for that is nothing makes your income worth, less, especially for poor people, than high inflation, which means that to combat that inflation or reduce the inflation is the primary goal of our bank. We don't even, we don't even have partial mandates or anything strange like they do in the U.S. For us, it's bring down inflation, because inflation is the number one eroder of people's incomes. So although we don't have a specific act of our own, it's in the interest not only of the Reserve Bank, but all South Africans, that we reduce this inflation to the lowest possible, back to a low level. And recently, I think the governor has mentioned that our level is a bit too high compared to our partners. We currently, the bank currently targets the midpoint of 3 to 6%, which is 4.5%. But we've heard the Reserve Bank governor recently say it should perhaps be 3% that we should be targeting as an inflation target over this point. And I think that sort of highlights the fact that a lot of the people in the bank you know, want to reduce this inflation, act or not, to a level that our economy could sustain. We also can't be as low as a developed economy because we need to create
growth. That's exactly the point I think I wanted to go into, and I think it's always going to be an interesting one, Frank, looking at National Treasury's stance as well as then Reserve Bank's stance. And I do know that, of course, Reserve Bank always insists that their mandate, primary mandate, is price stability in the context of sustainable economic growth. But fiscal prudence is one of the things that's becoming a big, big, big area of concern at this point in time. We are going into the medium-term budget speech. Often, of course, nothing big comes out of the medium term, but it often tees up what we may expect in the February budget. But for me, here's the thing that I've found quite interesting. National Treasury, in the way in which they posit, they say that their approach or fiscal approach is counter-cyclical, right? And so when you are in a contractionary environment from an economic growth point of view, simply the position that National Treasury has said that they're going to approach the budgeting process must be counter-cyclical, because we do know there's enough literature that shows that once you become pro-cyclical in a downward cycle, that actually results in lower kind of potential growth in the long, medium and long term, and actual realized growth as well. And now they've got a bit of a pressure point. On the one side is that debt servicing costs are now what, 24 cents for every rand collected. Our tax base is declining, but at the same time they've got to think about what would it actually mean to spend your way into growth. How do you, I guess, model this complexity that National Treasury, from a fiscal management and a fiscal prudence, trying to balance those two acts at this point in time?
Yes, I think that's very correct. I think often perhaps we don't think as much of it because we've got ourselves into this sort of debt situation that got us in, you know, to where we are with respect to our sovereign downgrades, et cetera, et cetera. But if I just talk theoretically about a situation where one has very tight monetary policy, that means in a high interest rate environment like we're having at this point in time, then you know that the private sector, in other words, consumers are not going to try and consume as much as they usually do. They're not going to, businesses will not invest at these high interest rates. It's obviously not beneficial for them to do so. So you need the government then to stand in with fiscal policy and try and promote some, as you said, sort of basic growth initiating investment. So this is an optimal time, I think, theoretically, to invest in things like infrastructure improvements, etc. And I think I just saw today that they actually have approached international lenders for some loans, not that massive at this point, but on pretty beneficial terms. They are looking to borrow some money that will be spent. I'm not sure on what, but it is a good time for fiscal policy to come through and sort of do its part of the heavy lifting while everybody else who's sensitive to interest rates is a bit on the back foot. But we also have to watch what our growth potential is. So if you're a business and you go to a bank, they will give you credit to a certain point from which they will say, well, it's going to be difficult for you to earn the money to pay us back if we lend you more than this. And a country is, in a way, the same. If we're only growing at, let's call it 1.8% this year, going down to 1.5% next year and remaining around that level, you know, we're not generating an awful lot of income to pay back these loans. And so we're pretty close to a ceiling of how much we can borrow under these times, which is a bit of an unfortunate situation for us. But there is a space for fiscal policy or spending, and this would be such a place.
And I mean, the Reserve Bank governor often laments that the Reserve Bank is not in charge of growth, and other parts of the economy have to work optimally for then the whole system to actually do what it needs to do. But the two things for me that still are, I guess, the things that I struggle to make sense of. We know that Like you said, we import a lot of our inflation first and foremost. Mm. And when you are in a stagflationary environment, monetary policy as a cooling mechanism is actually ineffective. And that's why we're seeing administered prices shooting north of 10%, food prices shooting north of 10%. And this is actually the basket of the people who are most exposed to inflation, actually, in with those particular basket of goods are the poorest of the people in the economy. Mm-hmm. And so as much as, you know, we can talk about, you know, that high kind of cost of living at this point in time ultimately impacts the poorest the most. But I'm sitting and wondering, well, if we are a developed economy, how much inflation can we actually tolerate towards while we try to spur a little bit of growth? Keynesian economics talks exactly about that, is that as soon as you don't solve for the demand side of the economy, there's nothing you can do. You can, and this is what Japan is struggling with, right? And so we're not solving for the demand side of the economy as well. And I'm wondering, say, actually, the Reserve Bank governor is saying maybe we should be tolerating a lower midpoint from an inflation targeting point of view. And I'm probably saying we probably should be tolerating something a little bit higher.
Mm. Yeah, look, I think there are many opinions, but I mean, look, the bottom line is if we have higher inflation, then, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in many ways, because one, the value of your income in rands deteriorates faster, and two, if you're trading with countries that have a lower inflation rate, your exchange rate will depreciate over that time, so you will import more inflation. So in the long term, prudence is or a lower rate is preferable to a higher rate, is specifically if you're not growing. If we were growing at 5% GDP sort of levels, one could tolerate more inflation.
Sure.
But, you know, so these things are complex, and I think we also sort of paying some fees for the mistakes of the past, the corruption, you know, the infrastructure that's breaking down now. These things are creating a lot of the internal inflation through your electricity prices and so on, transport costs, etc.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we're also not making policy in a sort of ideal environment where we're neutral. And so I think it's important in these days also to look at things from more than one side before one makes one's view up.
And very quickly then, you know, Frank, when we just then looking at outlook coming out of, I guess, your guys' report at this point in time, you know, inflation has, of course, been a big talking point at this point in time. Current account deficit or current account balance in general is a big talking point as well. And we're talking about fiscal fiscal prudence as well around just the fiscal frameworks in which we're thinking of how we're thinking about responding coming to the MTBBS and then going into the main budget in February as well. Just high-level views again in terms of just kind of outlook for what's left in the year.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, growth is declining. We don't know what specific levels. We see inflation starting to come down. We'll probably still be above the upper limit well into next year, okay, only then returning to that 4.5%, you know, into possibly 2020, end of 2023, beginning 2024. The current account surplus has been an interesting one, and has sort of helped us bail ourselves out a little bit, both on the tax revenue side as well as the growth side, in that, you know, we've had this unusual surplus on our current account. Selling our commodities at real high rates while not importing as much during the COVID period, specifically oil, that was. And we knew the price of oil in 2020 was very low compared to what it is this year. We saw that the current account returned to a deficit for the second quarter of the year, but our forecast is still for a small positive or a small surplus for the current account for this year in total. And that will also help, you know, tax revenues. It's obviously an inflow of foreign money. It's increased exports. And these things will help buffet whatever headwinds we do face. We're in line with high inflation for the, for this year for sure. We see it around, you know, 7, possibly a little above. I mean, that's unusual for the last couple of years, which maybe also just tells you how well the monetary policy has worked at, you know, up until this point. But that inflation will come down, and with it perhaps a little bit of interest rates, depending on where we end up at the end of the year in terms of that.
Sure. Moderation in that interest rate, certainly. And South Africa, of course, may not necessarily at this point in time have all the benefit that they did earlier from higher commodity prices. And so interesting, I guess, areas of pressure for the country as well, as we try to figure out what is a fiscally prudent, you know, framework to adopt at this point in time to manage, I guess, overall pressure points that we've got coming from all angles, imported inflation as well being a critical one. And also because, you know, we are seeing currency weakening at this point in time, which is also, of course, exacerbating that the extent of that imported inflation. And we know that South Africa is the 20th most traded currency in the world. And so that also creating a little bit of volatility for our currency, because 84% of the guys who trade our currency are foreigners at this point in time. And so really, really interesting areas, I think, of consideration for the policy makers at this point in time, but certainly appreciate all of the insights you have shared with us, Frank, and wishing you a lovely evening further.
Thank you. You and the listeners too.
100%. Power listener, that was Frank Blackmore, who is the lead economist at KPMG, giving us, of course, the South African texture of their latest economic outlook report that they have been studying at this point in time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.